Good afternoon and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Jamila Hammond coming to you live from Studio B and USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Colby Martin. It's Thursday, April 7th, 2022. On today's show,
the continuation of USC's custodial protests,
welcoming Selena back into theaters on its 25th anniversary,
and using caffeine to energize an overlooked community.
All that and more, but first, these news headlines.
From Annenberg Media, I'm Xinshu Wang. Sacramento police have taken a third suspect of last Sunday's mass shooting into custody today and charged the others with illegal possession of firearms. According to police investigation, at least five gunmen and two groups were involved in the shooting caused by gang violence. The shooting resulted in six dead and 12 wounded. The Senate has just confirmed this afternoon that Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson will become the 116th Supreme Court Justice. She is the first black woman to serve the highest court in its 233-year history. Kamala Harris, the nation's first black and Asian female vice president, announced the final tally for Jackson. Jackson's supporters anticipate that she will bring diversity and new life experiences to the judicial system. The United Nations has suspended Russia from their Human Rights Council over reports of quote-unquote gross and systematic violations and abuses of human rights in Ukraine. The U.S. spearheaded the proposal and it has generated 93 votes in favor of suspending them so far. Moscow denied the attacks on civilians, despite videos and photos documenting Russia's war crime in Bucha and other towns. Russia's deputy UN ambassador announced that Russia has decided to quit the Human Rights Council altogether. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has tested positive for COVID and is currently asymptomatic. In the meantime, China has strongly warned against Pelosi's scheduled visit to Taiwan in the near future, according to news outlets in Taiwan and Japan. China says the visit would severely impact Chinese-U.S. relations and has urged Washington to cancel the trip. And those are some of the headlines for today.
USC janitors and other members of the community protested again today regarding what they call unfair wages. Today's protest was the third since last Wednesday. Will Simons has the story.
USC custodial staff and students protested again today on campus to demand higher wages for the university's cleaning staff. This protest comes prior to tomorrow's contract negotiations with Aramark. Aramark is the contracting company that employs USC's cleaning staff. Their labor contract expired last Thursday. Last week, Aramark offered its employees a pay increase of 30 cents per hour. Christian Ramirez is the policy director for Service Employees International Union, United Service Workers West, which is the janitor's union. He sees Aramark's initial offer as a, quote, slap in the face.
And it is truly shameful that the folks that make this campus so beautiful are forced to survive on poverty wages. What we're saying is that it's time to come to the table with a real solution and to offer workers a salary that is going to allow them to live with dignity and to get the respect that they deserve.
Custodians are asking for the university's support in their negotiations for a larger pay increase. Many students have come out to support the protests. Sonia Iyer is a member of the USC Student Coalition Against Labor Exploitation, also known as SCALE, which has been helping the janitors organize.
I think just a lot of students are not very familiar with just the daily lives of these workers and how hard they have to fight and struggle just to have a living wage. I really believe that it's our duty as students to stand with them and fight with them.
Salvador Hernandez, who has been a custodian at USC for 32 years, is grateful for the support from students and faculty.
We are sending the strong message. We were preparing to go to strike. Would you guys help us, support us, the rest of it is going to be easy.
Ramirez is hopeful for the outcomes of the negotiations.
Look, anytime that workers and students come together, and faculty and professors come together, that's when power happens. That's when change happens.
Ramirez said if demands are not met tomorrow, workers are prepared to strike.
than the folks that make millions of dollars on this campus to start preparing their brooms and their mops, because they're going to end up cleaning. Workers are not going to clean their mess.
Scale has called on the USC community to contact Aramark and university administration to provide an adequate solution. For Annenberg Media, I'm Will Simons.
Jamila, I have a question for you. I hear we were talking about coffee and you tell me that you're on a matcha binge or something.
I've got to admit, my wife turned me on to matcha, and I just want more matcha. I'm a fiend for matcha, but I'm a coffee head.
So no coffee beans whatsoever.
I have not had any coffee in the last 3 days, but I also blame Ralph's for not having my coffee. So it's been a teamwork.
See, you're making it sound like as though you haven't had a cup of coffee in like months.
Deprived.
Well, whether it be for energy or to serve our addictions, many of us start our day with a cup of coffee. But one shop in Huntington Beach is brewing more than just coffee. In fact, it's boosting a labor force for a community that has historically been excluded. Here's Shayla Escudero pouring us the story.
Iced honey oat milk latte.
Yes.
Anything else for you?
That's it.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
At Able Coffee Roasters, it doesn't feel like your typical coffee shop. Sure, people are hunched over their laptops and there's burlap sacks of coffee beans propped against the wall, but it feels more calm than the bustling atmosphere of most cafes. In fact, it's pretty quiet. It's all done on purpose to feel inclusive, because this coffee shop primarily hires disabled workers.
Iced latte with oat milk?
Yes.
Aiden Gertson is often the first person to greet you and take your order.
$6.50, Christian.
Able Coffee works with each employee to accommodate their needs. For Gertson, that means giving him freedom over his hours when he has a panic attack, and being mindful that his cerebral palsy affects the mobility of his hand.
They're more flexible in my schedule. They look for things that you can do, not forcing you to do stuff you can't do. That's pretty much how they work here. They understand people with disabilities.
Adil Asif and Anthony Pomeri own the coffee shop. As special education teachers, they are committed to finding jobs for their students after they graduate, often 6 months in advance. But the two had odds stacked against them. According to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, the unemployment rate for adults with disabilities is nearly twice as high as those without disabilities. It was difficult for them to find employers that were willing to accommodate disabled workers. So, Pomeri says they created their own business.
We bought a commercial coffee roaster and we started roasting with the hope to have our students and our workers package the coffee after we roasted it, and that would be the job that we paid them minimum wage for.
But that idea is now an expanding business. Workers do more than package coffee. They take orders, brew coffee, and make a variety of drinks from espressos to rose chai lattes. And although their business is expanding, with one storefront in Huntington Beach and another in Fullerton, Pomeri says their primary goal has not changed.
As educators, we both believe that there's a job for everybody, and everybody's able to do something, to contribute in their own way.
The employees are given the space to learn and make mistakes. Asif says it's all about accommodations, even in the design of the coffee shop.
A lot of individuals with disabilities have like sensory processing disorders, or could be like an overload or overwhelming. So we just wanted to keep things very simple, very organized.
The shop does feel simple and organized. There's lots of space between tables and furniture for people to move around. But manager Allie Lewis says that what's even more important is that it's inclusive.
Individuals who do have disabilities, when they come in, they just see it as like a safe place immediately, because they see either the artwork on like our murals, or even just like they can read the mission statement. I think we just try to tailor it to all different types of customers that are coming in, and the entire shop just feels like a warm, like welcoming place.
For Able Coffee, it's more than just a space to study or a place to get a boost of caffeine in the morning. The words on the mural say it all: community and love. For Annenberg Media, I'm Shayla Escudero.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Bitty bitty bum bum. Selena the movie is coming back to 500 theaters nationwide on today, April 7th, 25 years after its release. The re-release honors the late queen of Tejano music and her legacy, reporter. 'Cause I'm dreaming.
Do you recognize this song? Whether you've heard it before or not, you can clearly feel the nostalgia. Selena Quintanilla is undeniably one of the most prominent and influential Latina singers of all time. Her songs have captivated millions of people. Despite her tragic passing in 1995, the singer's memory has lived on and continues to be celebrated to this day. Over the years, Selena has sold over 18 million records and remains one of the best-selling acts in Latin music. Not only has her music soundtracked the lives of millions, but Selena continues to serve as a role model and inspiration for many, especially the Latinx community. This year marks the 25th anniversary of the movie Selena. The movie, which starred Jennifer Lopez as Selena, was released in 1997 to critical acclaim and instantly became the defining portrayal of the Tejano singer's life. The film follows Selena's life starting with her childhood in Texas and her passion for singing, then her subsequent rise to fame, her love story with guitarist Chris Perez, and ultimately her tragic death. To this day, the film continues to introduce Selena to new fans and those looking to learn more about her life and career. Over the years, the movie has gained an iconic status as a groundbreaking piece of Latinx cinema and the defining portrayal of Selena, who changed Latin music forever and whose life was taken too soon. Just last year, the film was inducted into the National Film Registry of the Library of Congress for being culturally significant and highlighting Latinx contributions to film. Selena's story continues to be told by many. Just last year, Netflix released Selena the Series, a biographical television series which dove even deeper into the singer's life. Raymond Arturo Perez, a staff writer for the show, shared about Selena's status within the Latinx community, specifically in Texas, where the singer was born.
Growing up in Texas is just like such a unique atmosphere where you breathe Selena, like whether you're white, black, Latinx, whatever your ethnic background, if you grew up in Texas, Selena's just in the air.
Perez also believes that the movie is so revered because of its relevance to the Latinx community. He thinks that people who watch the movie can identify with Selena and her life, specifically Latinx audiences.
I think the Latinx community, like many others, really has this deep belief in the American dream about if you work hard enough that you can rise above. And so I think watching something like Selena is such a, you know, also tragic, but such a beautiful story in that it says to a lot of folks like me that success is possible and that American dream is achievable.
Selena the movie has been recognized for having strong Latinx representation. Since the movie's release, Latinx representation in Hollywood has improved, but Perez believes that there is still a long way to go. In many movies, stories centered around Latinx people typically involve issues like gentrification, immigration, and drug trafficking. But Perez believes Latinx-focused films should center around other subjects.
Stories of love and romance and sci-fi and joy, like those are also worth noting, and I don't think we get the opportunity to play in those spaces as much as we'd hope. And so I think as the studio network exec pool starts to diversify and or executives in power recognize that those stories matter as well, I think I'm excited to see those changes happen.
As Selena celebrates its 25th anniversary, new audiences will have a chance to be touched by the life of the legendary singer and experience Latinx music and a story of love and family. For Annenberg Media, I'm Sam Tarlov.
To promote Sexual Assault Awareness Month, Relationship and Sexual Violence Prevention Services, RSVP, organized a trauma-informed yoga workshop earlier this week on Tuesday, April 5th. Amy Osborne, the yoga workshop instructor, is the director and founder of In Yoga Collective, an organization dedicated to providing strategies for trauma reduction among survivors of sexual assault. She is here to further discuss the role yoga and meditation can have in promoting what her organization calls a trauma-conscious community. Amy, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. So right off the bat, what can you tell us about trauma-informed yoga, especially its distinction from general yoga?
Yeah, I think for those who have experienced a trauma-informed yoga class, it can be deceiving because who wants to walk into a yoga class and think about trauma, right? So when you think about the term trauma-informed yoga, the actual content of the class is just geared toward a lot more inclusivity, not only in the form of all bodies, which is often connotated with accessible yoga, but in general, the intention is for you to do what your body needs. And that can look different every day for everybody. And so it's a space where we accommodate people in giving them space to relieve stress through the body. There's plenty of research out there about how the body stores stress and trauma. And so really there needs to be a body movement portion of our stress release that doesn't really exist right now. And so these trauma-informed classes are really about providing tools in your life, on your living room floor, I like to say, while you're watching Netflix, some tools to reduce stress, to move tension through the body is really the whole purpose.
Absolutely. You know, your organization's website promotes the application of Western physiology to yoga, a very Eastern practice. How did you bridge this connection between two very different worlds with polar opposite values and practices?
I love that because the polarity is real, and yet there's also what I believe an awareness or a truth that we're better together. So bridging the two, bringing the two together, applying the Western science, anatomy, physiology. I have worked for and graduated from Loyola Marymount University's Masters of Arts in Yoga Studies program, which contains a lot of Dharma traditions study, so really the philosophy and history and language, but also a lot of anatomy, physiology, and therapeutic application. So thinking about how various pranayama or breathing techniques, asana or physical postures, mindfulness tools, meditation tools, there's mudras with the hands, which are like acupuncture points almost through the fingers to release tension. So there's mantras, affirmations, there's so many tools, as I like to refer to them, that can be applied singularly. But for me, I was also kind of a science brain in wanting to understand how and why it works before I would buy into something that I say is like the fluffy stuff, like what is a mantra? What is an affirmation? So I ended up publishing my master's thesis on kind of the neuroscience and the physiology, so the science, Western science, of these practices that have been evidence-based, trauma-informed practices, published through the National Institute of Health, through the government. So we know these are validated. So it's really about rationalizing for us Western brained folk, myself included, how and why we should be doing these practices and exploring which ones work for us individually. Great question.
Amy, as you're well aware, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, as you know, and since you took part in the yoga workshop. So what does sexual assault mean to you? And if you're able to, what tips would you give to those out there, whether they are survivors themselves or those trying to support them?
Thanks. And yes, I've worked with many populations, so not at all positioning myself as an expert in this area. But I do, just like any trauma, emotional, physical, mental, if you look up one study related to any of this, look up the ACE study by Kaiser Permanente, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study. It's mind-blowing how, 10 or so years ago, this maybe 15, this study was published telling us that if we've experienced 1, 2, 3, 4 of these things, be it addiction in the home, violence in the home, sexual assault, there's a list, that we will have habits later, behaviors later. And just normalizing that a lot of the stuff we struggle with as humans is a result of nervous system deregulation. Like, we're just in fight or flight. We're constantly stressed, constantly triggered. And if we can start to tune into what that is for us specifically and find tools to self-regulate or to calm ourselves down, then we suddenly have the power in those situations. And so whatever type of trauma anybody might be, and that I say, like, almost getting hit by a car when you're driving is a trauma to the body and mind. Your body tenses, your heart races, your mind kind of flashes, your pupils dilate. And so knowing that moving through the body is really important to process any type of stress or trauma in this way, but also acknowledging your unique circumstances and not thinking there's a blanket statement for everybody, exploring what works for you, because everybody is their own blueprint of this. And it's really just about exploring and being open to different tools that are available. So
absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you so much for joining us. Amy Osborne is the founder of In Yoga Collective, an organization that offers programs centered around trauma-informed care. To learn more, visit inyogacollective.com. Amy, again, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's all we have time for on today's From Where We Are. Yuki Leung, Irohi Shiefi, Jeffrey Lee, and Fernando Cienfuegos produced today's show. Such a dream team, y'all. You have no idea. Fernando Cienfuegos runs our board.
And we had help from Grace Harrington, Veronica Sierra Leone, Mendy Kong, and Ivana Betty. Derek Renfro composed our theme music.
We stream live on KXSC. Follow us at kxsc.org/listen. And we're on YouTube at Annenberg Radio News.
Subscribe to From Where We Are on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And look for us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Annenberg Media. I'm Colby Martin.
And I'm Jamila Hammond. From all of us at Annenberg Radio, wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again for
From Where We Are. Get that matcha. Thank you.